That means it's time for Midweek Media Watch with Colin Peacock, who joins us from the Wellington studio. Kia ora to you, Colin.
Kia ora, Emil. Didn't you have a Midweek Media Watch yesterday as well?
We had a mini Midweek Media Watch, which is, yes, a hard sentence to say.
Yeah, Hayden called it the overspill right at the start.
The overspill, yes, indeed.
Wouldn't that be the underspill? Maybe this is the overspill. I'm overthinking it, sorry. I should underthink it.
It's going to be a... one hell of a Midweek Media Watch tonight, Colin, the kind of media watch where you might be well advised to have a stiff drink with you in the Wellington studio with. Where should we begin? Probably with the stuff that happened today, right? Should we talk about News Hub first of all?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm sure people have heard about it. It's been leading the news at RNZ all day, and both TV bulletins, of course, predictably, but extraordinary, these two things in tandem at News Hub today. I mean, this is, I guess, effectively the biggest single redundancy closure for a very, very long time. And, you know, so much hope from people that the length of time that had elapsed since they announced it 5 weeks ago now, and, you know, this being a global corporation that wasn't obliged to consult in the same way that maybe Television New Zealand would be, people thought that possibly there would be a rethink going on, some sort of white knight or investment or plan B. But no, that wasn't to be. They had their meeting today at 11 o'clock, and pretty swiftly after that, the news from the flying in executives from, I think, Singapore was, nope, the axe has fallen. So that's effectively it for News Hub. So you'll have a newsless TV3 channel for the first time in, what, 30 years since its creation, 35 years, in fact. So that's the guts of it.
Is that definitely the case? Are there any lifelines, any potential, you know, saviours for News Hub here? Or have all options kind of been exhausted at this point?
Yeah, it does seem as though, well, they're not dismissing the possibility, put it that way, but on News Talk ZB yesterday, this is quite interesting, when the TVNZ news happened yesterday, and there was the talk of this so-called fair go solution, where they're not going to produce the TV show, or they say they won't, as they have done the past 47 years. It's going to be something else, possibly a digital thing, with four staff remaining to tackle consumer journalism with this Fair Go brand. So, for example, a bit of audio we've got for you. Patrick Gower was asked on News Talk ZB if this meant that maybe there was some hope that this sort of thinking might help save some News Hub programming, possibly even his own. Patrick Gower didn't sound like it yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I think other people will be fine, but, you know, for yours truly, you know, sort of an aging old tusker, you know, they won't have a place for me in any sort of newfangled kind of thing.
So even if there was a fair go type solution, he didn't think he'd be part of it. But after, it was interesting to hear him after the news of the closure, when himself and others were speaking to reporters outside that meeting, he was a lot more bullish. Here he is talking to reporters after that.
News Hub needs a lifeline. We know that people are talking about giving News Hub a lifeline. These people deserve a lifeline. Kiwis deserve News Hub to keep going, and the key thing now is that those people who are going to look to do these deals get on and get them done and save some of these people and save some news for Kiwis.
Colin, Hayden last night was talking about, you know, some of the rumours swirling around here that maybe Stuff was looking to take on the news bulletin, that maybe it's the sort of thing that NZME, it might appeal to NZME to get the sort of triple threat of, you know, radio, print and television as well. Any news on any of those rumours and speculation?
Triple Threat would be an actual great media brand name, actually.
Hey,
I'd invest in that. No, sorry, I shouldn't make light of it. But no, yeah, that's true. I heard Hayden talking about that, and people have been talking about that all day. It's a lot of secrecy involved in this, and you could maybe understand it with a company with the likes of Warner Brothers Discovery and presumably a lot of lawyers involved in all of this. And if there was to be any of those sort of involvements of other companies, it only makes sense to do that once it's all out in the open, or formally anyway, it's all out in the open that the existing arrangement is, you know, coming to an end, and that makes it possible to go ahead with it. So what we understand has happened is a bunch of media companies have seen this as a possible opportunity, not necessarily the rescue or revival or buyout of the existing News Hub brand, that's highly unlikely, but something else to give Three that live presence of news, even if it's slimmed down, pared back or whatever. The question would be how much Warners are prepared to put into this. So we understand some media companies have not interested Warner Brothers. They've said, that's very interesting, thank you, but we won't progress that. Mm. A lot of reading between the lines saying that Stuff is the one that's prepared to progress this and the company might be interested, just don't know. But interestingly, when a Stuff journalist asked Stuff for comment on whether on the issue of it being understood at Stuff that Stuff was engaged, Stuff wouldn't comment to Stuff about the understanding. So, you know, so it's a bit like that.
Yeah.
So we don't know, but we believe that there is some interest that was progressed at least to some level. We don't know where it'll go. But the key thing is, how much do they want to spend? Because tens of millions to keep a mainstream television news brand alive. As Hal Crawford, their former news boss, put it, there's a minimum viable spend to create a television operation. And they won't want to spend, they want to carve out this cost. I mean, that's what this plan is. So they won't want to spend much of a fraction of the tens of millions they've spent on News Hub so far. So is there a way that another news company, that it's worth their while to do it? And of course, July the 5th is not far away.
Yeah.
Someone would have to have an absolute ulcer trying to find a way of getting a credible video product or, you know, daily news bulletin to go out in the evenings. So that's it. And the other question is, when Warner Brothers embarked on this first and made the announcement they wanted to close News Hub, there was lines in their statement saying they're thinking beyond linear television. This is about, you know, going digital first, their 3Now app, all of that. So do they want a bulletin to last just a few months to transition into that and try and take the audience with it? Or is this a long, you know, who knows, too many variables. And it's hard to look at the case for this, that a media company that could do it and has the resources and the ability and expertise would actually find it worth their while. Mm. And a real open question as to what Warner's really wants to do.
We are, particularly with the advertising market the way that it is. We'll come on to that maybe a bit later on.
Yeah.
Colin, I got a question from a listener, Ian, earlier on. I'm not sure whether you know the answer to this, but it is a really interesting question and pertinent. Can Midweek Media Watch address what will become of News Hub's archives? They're a big chunk of the public record, a cultural marker. Surely it can't all just be switched off and lost in perpetuity. Do you have any info there?
No, not as such, but there is a line in the statement from Warner Brothers that they'd already been talking to Ngā Taonga, the National Archive, about that, which is interesting. And it was also raised after, I think, the TVNZ's first announcement. So we're going back 4 weeks or so. Melissa Lee, the broadcasting minister, was asked about it. It was the AM show. Melissa Chan Green asked the minister, look, there's 30 years of history here. What happens to all of that? And she said, yes, we have thought about it. And she referred in fairly vague terms to discussions being had at the Ministry of Culture and Heritage about it. So I think the problem certainly has been flagged. And it came to light when Today FM, owned by the MediaWorks company, coincidentally the former owner of TV Channel 3 and News Hub, they closed down Today FM last year. And overnight, all of their original digital content, their text, their even video productions, their podcasts, all just vanished. And people don't want that to happen. And indeed, you know, from the cultural and archive perspective, there'd be an awful lot of material there that must, one way or the other, be protected.
We talked to Hayden a bit about TVNZ's announcement of cuts in news to News and Fair Go. But we have had some more cuts confirmed, so maybe we should just wrap up everything that we know about TVNZ now, Cole.
Yes, indeed. If people have been listening to the news, they'll probably know this, but certainly after the closure of the news shows and Fair Go yesterday, that was confirmed. Sunday, it was confirmed. They had their staff meeting today, and then an all-staff meeting at 1 p.m. So that was confirmed. Sunday, their flagship current affairs show will close after 20 years under that name. Final broadcast May the 19th, so that's really soon. The chief executive said, as we announced yesterday, we are proposing to establish a new long-form team within our news operation, which would continue to bring important current affairs and consumer affairs stories to Aotearoa in a different way on our digital platform. So that sounds to me like a smaller, slimmed-down team of producers working across a range of subjects, and none of them really dedicated to specific programs or outlets.
Right, okay. Yeah. Any potential legal action in this space? I've heard some murmurings on behalf of the union.
Yes, indeed. Perhaps, well, yeah. Etu, which is the main journalists union, and that represents a lot of people at TVNZ. They've confirmed they're going to challenge TVNZ at the Employment Relations Authority. They say TVNZ's failed to meet obligations to staff under the terms of the collective agreement. They'd threatened that earlier, and they put out a statement about 3 o'clock today, so not long after those final confirmations of closures and that staff meeting, that they're going ahead. So that will be interesting.
Any meaningful response from the government on this? Because, you know, politicians possibly better liked than journalists, I don't know, it would be tough going, but you know, a lot of the politicians were saying really sympathetic stuff when the bad news about TVNZ and News Hub was first announced.
Yeah, and some of those who hadn't been all that sympathetic to media in the past, yeah. You know, certain New Zealand First Party leader springs to mind. But Christopher Luxon again said today the sort of things he said all along: media must innovate and modernise, there's no silver bullet, there's bigger issues going on here, and they're not inclined to get involved in a financial or a subsidy type way. Melissa Lee, the Minister of Broadcasting and Media, she appeared on Checkpoint just before 7 p.m., and it was interesting. She was pressed hard by Lisa Owen on what it is that she's working on. She said, look, we're preparing this cabinet paper. But she just wouldn't say anything specific other than some of our legislation is out of date, needs to be modernised so that, in her words, New Zealand media could compete with the world. But that doesn't really help. And Lisa had a real good go at pushing her on anything specific, but she in the end just said, look, it's a cabinet paper. I'll talk to my colleagues before I talk to you. I just won't reveal anything. So in the end, Lisa said to her, your plans are a secret, but you do have some. Yeah. And she said, yeah, definitely. But she pushed on things like the streaming companies because, you know, today the screen producers said, look, they're not under any obligation to do local content and they're making buckets of money. What about a levy on them or quotas? She wouldn't commit to taking a position on any of that. She just keeps saying there's a process in place, no time frame. And when asked about if she thought it was a problem, there was only one news service on television from the middle of the year, that being TVNZ, and only at 6 p.m. And the breakfast show in the mornings. She said, no, plurality's okay, in my opinion. There are other things out there. So, you know, she got a bit of flack yesterday for saying, look, I'm not a magician who can magic up a solution. But, you know, people aren't looking for magic. They just want some notion of what policy it might be that she's pursuing. And the fact that this cabinet paper, this policy she's working on, was not in the government's quarterly plan, its big action plan, means, you know, no one ought to be holding their breath for it, I guess.
I mean, do you have a bit of sympathy for her and the government here, though, in that, I mean, what are their options? You know, they can't just come in and pump a load of cash into TVNZ to keep it afloat year on year in perpetuity. You know, TVNZ is not structured like that. Intervening in the market in that kind of way would just enrage a lot of the other commercial players who don't have the same financial pressures. The stuff that you say about, you know, perhaps levies on social media giants and stuff, it's incredibly tricky to get that over the line, right? Because we're talking about Google and Facebook here.
Yeah, it would probably be resisted by those companies unless they thought it was going to be spread out to other digital operators and maybe get them off the hook, you know, the likes of Netflix or telcos or whatever. No, sure, all those things are difficult. But when she's saying, for example, she said to Lisa Owen, I want to talk to the sector, I want to find that she's been broadcasting spokesperson for a very long time. Yeah. And an opposition was saying there was no need for that broadcasting merger. And saying it was a problem in search of a solution or something similar, you know, nothing was broke, didn't need to be fixed, you know, persuaded by TVNZ's arguments at the time that they were in good health and able to attract revenue. I mean, it turns out it was broken. There is a problem. We're now looking at it. So to have no plan, and she's not the only one that doesn't have a plan. It seems like some of the companies don't either. But that seems to be where we are. So yes, sympathy in that two things. That some of this is operational stuff which you can't easily intervene in, and certainly with News Hub, that's absolutely the case. It's a private company whose business isn't working in the current market. But you know, just one thing they could take a position on is that digital fair news bargaining bill that could provide an income stream by the end of possibly 2025. It won't be instant, but it would help. But they're simply not taking a position on that too, saying, well, we'll look at it when the select committee comes back. Some things this government is prepared to punch through under urgency, other things not, and this appears to be in the not urgent basket.
Let's... we should talk about, because you did mention the opposition there, and obviously the opposition has an important role to play in this as well. What has the opposition said about this wider issue?
Yeah, well, the Labour Party leader, Chris Hipkins, has said today, after the both announcements, politicians need to take the funding issue seriously. He pointed to the fact of that Fair Digital News Bargaining Bill, which his government introduced but then couldn't get through because they did it too late, as being there. But, you know, his government walked away from the merger, which could have made a difference here, you know, the new public media entity, which could have removed the commercial pressure on TVNZ or given it that prospect. And he didn't mention that in his statement. Also, opposition spokesperson Willie Jackson hasn't had a whole lot to say, but he did try unsuccessfully today in Parliament to get the News Hub closure debated. In fact, we have a bit of audio here. This was Speaker Brownlee, who had a bit of a slip of the tongue when he announced that he was not prepared to grant that debate.
Members, I've received a letter from the Honourable Willie Jackson seeking to debate under Standing Order 399, the ministerial response to the confirmed closure of News Talk, News Hub. Yeah, turn off the alarms.
Oh, Parliament.
Yeah, wonder what that did to NZME's share price, the news that News Talk... slip of the tongue there, obviously. But, the Speaker there said, look, it's not really government or holding government to account business, you know, being a private company. So I think that was why they didn't end up debating it.
Let's move on and talk about trust in news. I have been asking our listeners for their comments about why trust in news is falling throughout the program today, and there's been some really thoughtful and interesting stuff in there. Maybe we'll talk about the background first of all, because there is an annual survey of trust in the news media in New Zealand, and it has shown another really quite precipitous drop, Cole.
Yeah, that's right. So again, people might have heard about this, them following the news earlier the week. It came out on Monday, wasn't it? So every year, AUT, the Centre for Journalism, Media and Democracy, runs the same survey of some years it's just over 1,000. I think some surveys have been 1,500 New Zealanders in a week each year. Ask them a bunch of questions about whether they trust the media, why not, which ones they trust. So the headline figure, do you trust the news most of the time? Just 33% said they did this year. And if you go back 5 years, that's a 20% slump. It was over half did in 2020. Mm. And for the first time, the proportion of people who say they trust it here most of the time was lower than the international average, because this thing is based on a Reuters Institute report that covers, 46 countries. So the international average of 40%, and we are now lower than that.
Yeah, and that's quite stark, isn't it? That, you know, all of those countries, we are... I mean, one of the things that puzzled me about this was there are countries with a higher trust in their media, with much more politically stratified media, you know, with papers that come out and say we're a left-wing paper, we're a right-wing paper. We don't really have that in New Zealand, but maybe that transparency actually contributes to people's overall trust, because they know where these different outlets are coming from. What do you think about that idea?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And I think if you ask people if they value the media, I think you might get a different answer than you do if you trust. I think that almost prompts people to express some of the cynicism they feel for a bunch of institutions. You know, you mentioned that there's a kind of knee-jerk cynicism about politicians, but people going to vote to do away with them and have some other form of government? Probably not. You know, they might value an alternative form of government to democracy a little less if they were asked if they value it rather than trust it. And the other thing is, look, although we have a clear trend over those 5 years, going down every year, that's no accident. It is still just a single survey of just over 1,000 people carried out over 1 week where anything could be happening. The headline figures, I get that. I think it does reflect something genuine in people's perceptions, but it is a survey of people's perceptions of trust. Mm. And I think it sometimes gets reported or interpreted as, you know, evidence that the media is less trustworthy and the public have cottoned on, you know. And when you look at the qualities, well, the people's actual comments, because some of them are selected, not many, but some are published in the report. They do that every year. So you can get a sense of the tone. And some of them are quite vague. And in previous years, I'd noted that some people, when they were that did get specific, were actually complaining about the wrong media outlet. I think they'd misunderstood. So there are individual conclusions. You might have heard reports of the survey. Mm. For example, the Herald said RNZ had been toppled from its number one spot, which is a bit dramatic. Also, the ODT has, Otago Daily Times has rated well traditionally in the survey, and it has. But we're talking about a relative handful of people out of 1,000 that would be able to make a judgment on the ODT, you know, just the people from that region that they're surveying, unless they're reading it online. So I don't put too much stock on the actual numbers. But yeah, the trend is clear, but it is, I think, relating to a perception. Actually, I've got a bit of audio from one of the report's authors, Dr. Mary Mililati. She appeared on 9 to Noon on Monday, the day the report came out. And I think she made an interesting distinction that's relevant here, which is between news and information.
Not just that the people are not trusting the news, they are not trusting the information. And this comes so strongly in the comments when they say that, okay, I read the news, but I go and check and verify my own facts. And then they say that, okay, and I go and, you know, I check the news sites, but then I go and, you know, verify my facts against my social media expert. So this is highly problematic. We don't know what these facts the people are checking are. So there is that they don't trust mistrust the news. They mistrust the information as a whole.
The alternative facts.
Well, I don't know if it's so much that, and it may not actually be the point that Dr. Mililati is making, but you know, the words media and the concept of what news media is and what people think it is could be very different to a lot of people. That's why when they do ask them about specific outlets, maybe that's where it does get a bit more helpful. But as I say, I think that the raw numbers possibly don't help as much there. But what do people, I think when people see, or they might think the way that News Hub does their news, which is a bit more out there and a bit more colloquial, and then think that this reflects badly on all television political news. It's hard to see when people see things they don't like how far in their mind the kind of taint spreads across the rest of the media or the other things they consider to be news journalism. Others might think of, you know, the newer outlets we've had. I mean, one interesting finding in the report actually was only its last 3 years consistent 13-14% of people who say they go to what they consider to be alternative news sites. Mm. And those have kind of mushroomed in the last few years. You might have thought more people be going to, you know, the platform or whatever that have cropped up and got a lot more attention. But that doesn't seem to be happening. So what people consider to be mainstream news media or even alternatives to that, it's not really clear because that's all in the eye of the beholder.
Let's talk a bit about some of the texts that have come through from our listeners this evening, and maybe one that thematically sort of segues us from what you're talking about to what we're talking about now is one of the broad themes that came through was the media doesn't tell the truth. And in a comment that I kind of made on that was that, you know, with a lot of things that get reported in the news media, there is no one singular objective truth. You know, multiple people with their own perceptions and experiences will have different impressions of different news stories, particularly in the realms of politics and policy and so on and so forth, right? But that is something that you hear a lot, that the news media doesn't tell people the truth. And it's a difficult criticism to come back against, right?
Well, that's where I think what Dr. Mililati was saying there about people maybe conflating information and media and journalism becomes kind of relevant, because if you think, yeah, the media is not telling me the truth, I mean, how much do you have to look through on a given day or a given week for stuff in the mainstream media you're convinced is untrue, is actually, whether it's by design or just omission and sloppiness? How hard would you have to look for actual factual misleading, you know, seriously wrong stuff.
Extremely hard, and you'd expect to see a correction note on that once that factual truth was pointed out.
Possibly, or maybe you wouldn't, I don't know. But the thing is, if you're looking at a whole bunch of media, as Dr. Milati was saying, a lot of people still look at mainstream media, particularly online, but then they're looking at their own sources of news and even community news information pages. A lot of people supplementing their media like that and still believing and using mainstream media, but also wanting to go to, you know, non-official or non-accredited media sources or amateur stuff. And in their mind, so if you do that, if you're one of those people that mixes and matches your info, are you really going to think that what's in your newspapers or Stuff or News Hub or TVNZ is not telling you the truth in a comparable way to the sort of stuff you're likely to see online? Because sifting through what people post as, you know, amateur or group type news online, you're far more likely to find stuff that's wrong. And there's no sanction, there's no complaints body, no gate or check like that. So when people say, yeah, the media doesn't tell us the truth, are they really talking about the accredited mainstream news media that are subject to broadcasting or like media council type watchdogs? I don't think so.
Let's talk about some of the specific texts that came through. Jim texted through and said, I hear, this is on the subject of why don't you trust the news media, or why might trust in the news media be eroding. I, writes Jim, hear an increase in the apparent need to awfulise news to make it sound worse than it really is. A recent example, a Ukrainian fighter had multiple shrapnel injuries and at the next bulletin was riddled with shrapnel. It's similar with weather warnings. I think Jim's getting there at the idea of sort of colourful language that might maybe strays into sort of hyperbole, boy who cried wolf kind of stuff maybe.
Yes, I mean, often I'm sort of guilty of this. You see people say these things, oh, it's media so sensational. Give us an example. They often really do. But Jim does in this case. He says, what gives one example of what he doesn't like. But that's also what I mean. But that's one example. Who knows what that might have been one of those, probably not a New Zealand journalist, right? If it's a report from Ukraine on television, highly likely to be ITN from the UK or CNN or something. You know, you don't know, played out if it was seen on a New Zealand source. And that's just a bit of license. So that's what I mean when you hear that and you think, does this then in the mind of the viewer taint, is he assuming that that's the motivation, that same tendency will spring forth in the minds of all journalists reporting this sort of circumstance? Because that to me seems relatively minor, but to Jim it's sensationalized. But I also think, actually, the more I think about this, that there's a lot less of that. I mean, sensationalization and over-emotionalization is a common criticism, you know, that if it bleeds, it leads thing that people think is kind of morbid and inappropriate on behalf of me. I think there's a lot less of that than there used to be. There was a time, if you go back 10 years ago, that a single kind of tragic death would often fill the front page of a paper like the Herald, the Post, Dominion Post as it was in Wellington, used to do this a lot. Big photo of the victim and the sad story. I don't think they do that nearly as much anymore.
Well, you can. I mean, they also don't just put out one story on the front page a day anymore, do they? You know, the lead story on a website will change multiple times every day. So it's a different environment entirely.
Yeah, it is. But if you have, say, that front page story, you know, tragic death of teen, whatever, big photo, heartstrings, all of that, that's a production choice, right? Of course, things cycle through on a website in a way that you're thinking, well, what judgments are they making? Or they might surface the clickbait and the stuff they think is going to get engagement. Sure, that happens, but that is a kind of clear indication of what people think, editors think, is going to shift papers and get attention. If it's, you know, that old-fashioned thing of people actually getting the product in print, if they're doing that. So that used to happen a lot. I don't think that happens anymore. I think that tendency is actually in abeyance, although other people might see it differently.
Another recurring theme that we're seeing is, you know, the idea of conflation of opinion and news. Someone texts in, half the issue is too many media channels having opinion pieces which appear as fact rather than balanced factual journalism. This has led to some people accepting alternative facts, as Kelly Conway coined it, add into the mix social media and alternative media plus shorter attention spans. It's wide open for disinformation and misinformation, etc. Mainstream media needs to get back to basics and present factual material and not opinions dressed up as news, is the long and the short of that.
Yeah, so is Kelly Conway, that'd be Kelly Ann Conway, the former Trump, she was the alternative facts person, wasn't she, when she was Trump's press secretary? I'm pretty sure that's what that's a reference to. Yeah, maybe, but this again comes up and has come up in that AUT trust report, where people complain about opinion. They don't like having opinion thrust upon them, maybe, or see too much of it in the mix. And that's understandable, right? But are people who... that people seem to have the impression that it's infected actual news reporting. And that's different. That's a form of bias. But so much of what is opinion that might alienate or annoy people, just either because they don't like the opinions or they just think the frequency and prominence is too great and that the news media shouldn't be doing that. Do they understand, are they clear on where the distinction is? Because if something's labelled opinion, it's separate from the news. That's just fundamental. And of course, there's selection, who the media get to be their commentators. You know, that will say something. And if there's too many opinion controversialists or contrarians, you can see how that would wind people up in a media outlet they value.
It's cheap and provocative too, right? Opinion content, you know, it's cheaper than reporting, and oftentimes it attracts lots of eyeballs and gets people invested in things.
Yeah, actually, if we've got time for a quick 30 seconds of what one of the report's authors said about this.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, this is Dr. Greg Treadwell, the other co-author of the AUT report. This is what he had to say about people feeding back in the report about that very issue.
We're getting a lot of feedback from the public that there's just too many opinion columns, you know. So they go to, and we
they
know
that.
They
want more news? They want more factual reporting of news?
Absolutely. Yeah. This is our strongest message to the media companies of New Zealand, is that you need to improve the volume of straight reporting in your publications, and they need to be better labelled.
Yeah, right. So interesting, but that's tough, because what he's saying is, yeah, just give us the straight facts. We don't want all this opinion. Fair enough, but that's a tough one for the media, because as you pointed out, it's high engagement stuff, which, you know, most people can just believe it, read it or don't, whatever. But yeah, it winds some people up. But in saying, yeah, if you're going to do right by the people that fed back in that way to their report, well, you're actually cutting out quite a lot of high engagement and high click sort of stuff that the media really wants. So that's in favour of like quite dry fact-based reporting that a lot of people frankly don't engage with, albeit that it's important if you want a straight rendering of things that are happening.
Colin, just finally, and we've only got about a minute left, but and I know that Hayden's going to do something on Sunday about this, but Henry Cook's written a really perceptive piece for his online newsletter, and one of the big things that he says is if journalists want to be taken seriously and trusted again, showing you're working and being humble about who you are and your flaws and the flaws of the media industry is a way to go about it, showing your own sort of fallibility. Do you sympathise with that?
Yeah, I do, but I think you've got to wonder what the appetite is for that. And, you know, people have said before, you know, show us, be honest about where your information comes from. If you're getting fed it as press releases, you know, put a kind of, you know, content label on your stories as to where this info came from. Mm-hmm. Lifting the curtain, not a bad idea. How many people really want to engage with it? It also lengthens the process of getting a story out. But yeah, Hayden was at an event tonight about that AUT report where a range of editors spoke about it, and we'll have that on Media Watch on Sunday.